Well, good morning and welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for May 25th, 2014. Koyo Kubose here, so very glad you joined us. This past weekend was a very special weekend. It was the induction ceremony for LM6. The sixth group of lay ministers to go through the Bright Dawn Center's lay ministry program. Almost 2 years of weekly study. And they came to Corso, California. It was the first time for them to meet each other in person. They came from Florida, someone went to California, Pennsylvania, all across the country. And it was interesting to put voices to faces. You know, you get used to hearing their voices, and now you meet them in person. And it's a good reminder for me about what this lay ministry program is all about, its impact on individuals, firsthand experiencing of what students go through. Several of them mentioned that when they first started the program, first of all, they were surprised that they were accepted into the program. They doubted themselves or their worthiness. And I think that's a healthy thing, rather than the opposite of being arrogant that they're you know, really good at something. You don't learn anything if you have that kind of attitude. In anything, you know, you got to have that real beginner's mind, as we say. And another emotion that was expressed quite a bit was gratitude. And I feel a very strong gratitude to the students, to the program itself. It's what keeps me fresh and keeps learning and keep growing myself. It's what enables me to enrich my own spiritual journey and growth. It's something that you just can't appreciate until you go through that. I think it falls on deaf ears when a teacher says, well, I thank the students for making it possible for me to teach, and through teaching, I learned so much. They understand that, but being on the other end of teacher-student relationship, it's only after you've been a teacher for many years, perhaps, that you really realize the truth of interdependency. And, well, needless to say, it was a hectic but busy and good hecticness with interaction, with laughing together, eating together. Really sharing life together. And it's a tremendous thing. today's guest that I'd like to introduce is Andy Goyo. He's from New Jersey, and whenever I talk about Andy Goyo, I always mention that our past goes back a long way. You know, he was a graduate student in the PhD program in the psychology department of University of North Carolina at Greensboro. I was on the faculty there, and even though I was not his advisor or anything like that, you know, at that time, the whole faculty was very young. And so we socialized with the graduate students quite a bit. And much of this took place on the playing fields. Every weekend, we would get together for football in football season, and then we go to the gym for basketball during the basketball season. So for several years, I played with and against Andy Goyal. Of course, faculty always beat the grad students. We had a very good team. And then this was in the 70s, and after going our separate ways, we had no contact for maybe 30 years. And then through his interest in Buddhism, and he learned of our organization. One thing led to another. After we reconnected, and in a few years, he started the Bright Dawn Lay program. And he was part of the LM4 group. Yeah, we've been through 6 years, not 6 years, I mean, what, 12 years of offering this program. And it's been a tremendous journey in shaping the program and seeing how everything develops. You know, we don't know how our paths, whether it's individual or organizational, goes through a lot. What's around the next bend, you know? All kinds of things. Well, I'd like to introduce for today's Dharma Glimpse, Andy Goyal.
Hi, everybody. This is Andy Bondi, and I'm recording this because I'll be working this weekend in Chicago. Hope everybody is doing well. It's finally getting nice and truly spring-like in the East Coast. But I've been thinking about a lot of things related to work and family, so I thought I would review a couple of ideas I've been mulling about. And my memory serves me reasonably well. Ananda helped care for the Buddha for over 25 years. During that time together, while Ananda was devout and memorized much of what the Buddha said, he did not attain enlightenment until after the Buddha had passed away. I've always thought of this in terms of the teacher-student relationship. Nothing that the teacher does, even when as skilled as the Buddha, can guarantee that the student will acquire particular skills. All we who at times strive to be teachers can do is keep trying different strategies. It was clear that the Buddha was a master at this, modifying what he said to fit his audience, and yet it did not always immediately work. Was Ananda's ultimate enlightenment influenced by the Buddha's teaching? Of course. Much of my work focuses on how to get teachers, professionals, and parents to be effective in helping those with autism and other learning challenges acquire skills. One of my constant questions to everybody is, can anyone guarantee that your next lesson will work? If so, please come work for us. Everyone realizes that the most cleverly designed lesson based on the best evidence-based practice may still not be successful. Then what? Well, what good teachers do is rather than blame the learner, other people, lack of school funding, etc., the good teacher tries another way. And so it also is with our children. We try through various means to help them acquire meaningful, productive skills and ways to live a happy, contented life. I'm now watching my youngest daughter, who's 26, excel at graduate school in ways that far exceeded any of her earlier academic accomplishments. She beams when she says she has a 3.96 GPA. she even aced a class about an important book that greatly influenced my life by B.F. Skinner. She still has her thesis to complete, but I have to admit, I listened to her description of some of her interactions with students and staff and seemed to see a streak of control that will not suit her in the long run. What can I do now that she's in school and I'm just dad hanging in the background? Our youngest son, who's 25, had a very tough time years ago with some serious issues related to drug use. He's been clean for over 5 years and working productively at our company. Yet he is angry and remains very anxious. He has not applied many of the strategies we and other professionals have suggested. He took some community college classes but never came close to completing a degree. He has now announced that he will quit in late June, give up a solo apartment in Philadelphia, and plans to take all of his money, travel to Spain and other parts of Europe. He speaks no Spanish or other languages until his money runs out, then come live with us and try to take some math classes to see if he can get into an electrical engineering program. When Lori and I asked a series of what we viewed as practical questions, he angrily said we were the only people not supporting him. When I suggested he might want to open a dialogue about seeking happiness, at least, with Koyo-sensei, he was angry that I was not respecting his desire not to speak with anyone and what to do. I told him how much I loved and cared for him and tried talking a little bit about my take on Buddhist view regarding who, what is responsible for one's happiness, none too effective. What to do? Both my Buddhist understanding and my behavioral training lead me to think that I have to continue to try different strategies, but which ones? I know he is an adult and that I must let him both fail and succeed on his own. Will I have to get involved in his less successful moments? Just last month, he insisted he needed to get away to some place sunny and warm. Though we initially resisted his request to go to Mexico, we eventually helped him and paid for a nice vacation there while we were working in Poland and Romania. We talked before he left about many practical issues, including issues related to money. On the second day of his trip, he called in the middle of our workshop, frantic that he had no money, that no ATM machine accepted his bank card, and he was angry that they only spoke Spanish at the bank. Turns out he had taken only $60 with him. So what will happen over the 2 months this summer when he's overseas? He did agree to make it only 2 months and start some classes in the fall, so he is at least planning a little bit more about what to do when he comes back. But we'll see, and we will be parental. I will try to continue to point out how my Buddhist studies and practices have helped me, but will I manage not to be pushy about this? Can I convey that I'd rather help financially than see him move in with us again? Will he seek work while going to school? All life is filled with dukkha, and there is no escape. Speaking of escape, Lori and I are planning to go cruising around Fiji and rent a home for 3 weeks in 2015 for our 20th anniversary. What dukkha will befall us there, I wonder? All right, back to applying various lessons and striving to learn new ones, and I hope you are all content with your path. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much. As I listen to that sharing of life experiences, what came to my mind was even though the Dharma and all its teachings has a lot of valuable insights and learning about truths of life's realities, there's no guarantee that in an individual case, you know, it will fulfill a promise of a happy life for oneself or one's loved ones. And I remember one teacher's advice when a student came with some personal problems. And the teacher said, you know, when personal problems occur, of course you do your best to handle them, but don't forget to focus on the Dharma. Not so much necessarily as the Dharma, how the Dharma might be applied to that specific situation, but the Dharma teachings in general. There are, I will also remind you, the same message in Reverend Haya Akigarasu, my father's teacher, where he talks about incidents in life, where he says that we have to deal with many incidents in life, and we struggle, particularly when these incidents are difficulties, and they could be personal difficulties or difficulties with our family, whatever they are, we bring all the resources we can and we keep going. And in this article, Reverend Akigarasu points out that how do you handle life itself, not just the incidents in life? See, I think most of what we commonly consider one's life is actually handling all these kinds of incidents. And yet, Reverend Akigarasu points out that there's something beyond the life of incidents. And that's life itself. And that's what we're talking about when we say focus on the Dharma. Not so much the Dharma as how to handle the incidents, which may be okay too, may be helpful, to see that foundation. That's what we mean, I think, when we say Dharma is my rock. So that we could see the substance of life, we could see the okayness of life, with the okayness spelled with a capital O, even when things are not going okay, where that kind of okay is a small O, meaning the okay versus not okay. In the same way, we try to understand this, the teaching of every day is a good day. That good there is a capital G good, if you want to put it that way. Not good versus bad, but absolute good. What does that mean? You know, I guess part of it is acknowledging the inevitability of dukkha, of suffering, of difficulties. And it doesn't mean to be pessimistic in a way. It doesn't mean that you stop trying, okay, to solve these and handle these incidents in the best way you can. Okay. But we do so from a foundation of the Dharma is my rock. And we realize, I'm looking at the the passage, the Dharma is my rock. I have a 2x28 inches printout, and it's framed, and I'm going to put it into the new sanctuary that we're building, which should be completed this year, near the end of this year, I think. But it says in those words that yes, things will not go as I wish all the time. And yet, I will keep going forward with a smile because I know the Dharma is my rock. We need this kind of reminder that indeed, you know, as we tell our children, you know, life will not go our way all the time. Life is a bumpy road. And if we get past the fact of lamenting, why is this a bumpy road? If we accept that the road is bumpy, then we're more likely then to be able to find our shock absorbers, our ways of handling it, being on the lookout for the potholes. Some good shock absorbers is a sense of humor. Okay. This is where I think spiritual acceptance, not in terms of defeated resignation, but the kind of resilience, the kind of keep going, okay, and in almost not enjoying the not the proper word, but immersing oneself in the process, in the means, in the journey, and finding not necessarily joy, but a contentment in that every day is a good day and that the Dharma is my rock. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going, and you have a wonderful day. Thank you.